One is that the A beast of the amendment to the BMA that we need to approve today. You'll remember that we went through and all those amendments that we have gone through last week, a week before last, and now we need to approve them so that then they can be effected into the amendment bill. And then so that then we can, in the next opportunity, we should be able to go now to the amendment bill clause by clause and agree. And then there is a submission that was made to the speaker by the Congolese community. And in that submission, of course, they had a memorandum. And then the there is a part of that memorandum that talks to Home Affairs, the immigration police. Then we have got also some submission that was made to this committee by A. Mr. Sono in Sterkspruit, complaining high and low. Then there is, I'm sure, a response from the department, which we should have a look at it. Also, then there is the first term program of the committee, which we should look at. I'm sure you'll remember that in the past two terms, this opportunity for us to submit a program happened when the committee was not in session, and then we had to approve the committee on your behalf. This time around, then that is not happening because you are here, and then you must look at your own program and then and agree to it. But our program is becoming a little bit too tight because of things that just don't get done because of powers that are outside us. And I think that should more or less close our business today, honorable members. And then, of course, it's, today we don't have the lot of members here. I mean, of guests, we have got minimal guest list. We have Suen from the legal office. Then, other than that, then we have got Mandiwana is here. And then, as part of our persons that are visiting us from Home Affairs, the Asian office, and then we have got a gentleman that now has started to become very chronic to this committee, and he reckons that he's interested in the work of this committee. Probably, maybe he's putting together a thesis, I don't know, for Professor Chimbo. So I think that now, honorable members, I think the apologies is S. J. Nkomo is not here. And then Honorable Ficklin is a late arrival. And then Ms. Raputi, I think she should be overseas, if everything worked properly. Yeah, I think she's overseas, she's not going to be here. And then those are the only three apologies that I have in front of me. And... Now, I'm not sure whether everybody has got that that A list. Honorable members, everybody is having the A list of the BMA. That is this piece of document. Like as I said, is that the previous week we have gone through amendment per amendment, right up to the end. And then I'm not sure, it's Honorable Hlophe, have you had an opportunity to have a look at it? In any way you have been part of this, you should be knowing all those amendments. And then, now, our amendments, we must, I think we must just take for, take note that these amendments will also affect the memorandum once agreed and put together into the bill. Then now they will actually inform the memorandum as a bag, and possibly also the I think it's the long title. The long title has already been corrected. But like as we're saying is that the memorandum is the one that will need to be adapted to cover these amendments that are here. And welcome, Honorable Hussein. And now, I think we have what we need to be doing, Honorable Members, is that we do have a responsibility of processing this piece of legislation and finalize it. And of course, it's in the process of processing this. We do make consultation, we do hold public hearings, and then those that we think that they have got something to say about it, and then I think we have done all that. We have invited people to come and speak to us, but at the end of the day is that we have provided for all the things that we need to be provided in the bill, except that we did request the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Home Affairs under the supervision of the Deputy President to just look at the issue that Treasury was worried about on which we have provided on the customs. But Honorable Members will remember that we have, after hearing what Treasury was saying about that, we have actually made a lot of concession whereby we have actually liberated customs in relation to revenue collection, revenue ownership. But what we have done is that we have tried to make sure that at our ports of entry there is one institution accountable on. And then that is what we have done. But we have actually ring-fenced revenue collection to stay with SARS, and then about security access at the ports of entry. And then we have provided that the BMA must be in charge and be accountable to it. I think that is what we have done in the amendments. And therefore, also of course is that on the, you'll remember that on clause 8, that is on page 5 of our A list. I hope that has been corrected. You remember that the 5 on 8.1, the 5 years that was written in figures, and then it was said that's going to be amended to be written. Mm-hmm. Yes, that has been done on the one that we have distributed, and then also on clause 13, page 7. think there was some sort of a recommendation for that to be corrected. It has been corrected. Okay. Is there anything that you wanted to take us through, Suen, on this before I subject it to members to approve? Like, as you have said, Honorable Hussein, is that we have gone through this amendment one by one the previous week, but there is nothing that stops you from still speaking to this for any sort of further clarification. Suen?
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to, it's just a few changes so that I'm going to highlight them quickly. On page 2, in the long title, we just adjusted it to say to provide for annual reporting by the Commissioner. Before it just said annual report. So that's the one change we made since the last meeting. So it says to provide for annual reporting by the Commissioner. The long title. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
To provide the annual reporting.
Okay. All right.
And then on page 5, clause 8, we've made 5 into words on 8.1, the last line of 8.1, for the period not exceeding 5 is in words now. Hmm. On page 7, clause 13, we reworked those clauses to reflect what the committee had raised about the security clearance. So in clause 13.3, there was an issue as to a person and before they appointed getting a security clearance. So we now change it to read, every person to be appointed as an official must, prior to appointment, successfully have undergone an appropriate security clearance process. So that deals with the issue of what happens to people before they join the BMA and become officials. That is the first requirement. And then in clause 13.4, we also just clarified that, and it now says an official refuses to subject him or herself to an appropriate security clearance process or fails such process must be subjected to disciplinary measures as determined by the Commissioner in terms of Section 11.2H Roman numeral I. So those are the two issues as to before the person joins the BMA and while they're at the BMA to clarify those processes. On page 8, clause 17, there was just a minor amendment, more of a drafting issue. So it said subject to the Constitution, and I think it said the rights of officers may be limited. So we just changed it to say subject to the Constitution, officers may from time to time and to the extent necessary for purposes of border law enforcement and safety of such officers be subject to those A to D. It was more to clean it up and make it sound, not repetitive. So that was just a clean up. And then...
The current amendment is...
So previously we had, subject to the Constitution, the rights of officers may. And we took out that part that says the rights of officers, because I think when when the bill was introduced, it said something different, and then when they redrafted it, I think they just didn't think through it properly, because it doesn't make sense to have the rights of officers in the sentence as it's drafted. So it says now, subject to the Constitution, and officers may, from time to time and to the extent necessary for purposes of border law enforcement and safety of such officers, be subject to searches and inspections. So the rights of officers doesn't fit in there,
yeah,
in that sentence. It doesn't read properly.
Okay.
Sure. And then the next amendment was on clause 25.3, regarding the whole issue of cabinet members when they're appointed. So in clause 25C, we've now stuck with the, I think it was originally said designated. Let me just check that. Yes, previously the interview.
3B, there is a portion that was deleted.
Yes, we had previously deleted that, and so now it says the cabinet members responsible for.
Yes.
We've got that, and we've got that list of cabinet members, and then the last one is C, which says any other cabinet member appointed by the president.
All right.
So instead of designate, yeah. If you look at, because the cabinet member must be appointed to the committee, but if you look at how it reads in the introduced vote, and it says the president may designate in two, the president may designate the deputy chairperson of the committee. So just to draw the distinction between appointment and designating, you are appointed to a committee, but you can be designated for a role.
Yes.
So you say this person is appointed, but you will do this particular task. You are designated to do a particular task. So just to differentiate between the meaning of those words. And then on page 10, on 3 on the top, we just clarify that a cabinet member referred to in 3B and C. So those from the listed members and those appointed by the president may be removed by the president if the president considers it necessary to do so. So that was also another point that the committee asked us to include. Both 3B and C may be removed by the president.
Yeah. Anybody who
and then clause 32 on page 11, the annual reporting clause, we cleaned it up and we had to reach consensus on how it should be worded. So we agreed to say subject to the Public Finance Management Act, and then A, the commissioner must prepare and submit an annual report, financial statement, and the reports of the auditor on those statements to the minister. And then B, the minister must table those reports and statements referred to in A in Parliament. So by subjecting it to the Public Finance Management Act, that means that all the time frames that the Act stipulates will now be included in the section, and they must comply with those time frames. Okay, in clause 36, the word such was included. So in clause 36.2, we said such there, yes, such imprisonment, and the same thing in clause 36.3.3, 2 years or a fine and such imprisonment. So that was also from the committee's direction. And chairperson, when the department of law advisor and myself went to the bill, we realized that there was one amendment that we missed, and that's clause 40, and it's more to deal with the fact that we redrafted one clause 31.2, and then the section had to change. So it's more also of a technical amendment. If you look at clause 31, yes, 31.3, it's on the top of page 11. Previously, the clause that dealt with gazetting of changing of ports of entry was in clause 31.2 in the bill as introduced, but with the redraft of that section, it now should change to 31.3. Those were the amendments after the committee's last meeting, and we have implemented all the changes as requested.
Are the copies that members having those amendments?
Yeah.
It's only this one of mine that I'm still having an old one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't have the latest amendment, I think. No. Let's just see. Where is my copy? I'll try to print it. Where is it? I did print it this morning. Right. Honorable members, let me put this one now underneath here. It's amended. Right. Is there anyone that still wants to speak on this amendment before we subject them to our approval? Honorable Hussein?
Yeah, Chair, thank you. My apologies firstly for being late. It's difficult to get here when you land at 8:30 with the traffic, but nonetheless. I just have a few questions and comments which follows, Chair, from the discussions that we already had. And if you don't mind, I'll run through them as quickly as I can. So the cover page, is that page 1? If the cover page is page 1, then can we just go to page 3, if you don't mind, under clause 2. I haven't dealt with this before, but I just want to raise the question and perhaps you can just get the answer. And I'm referring there to the border protection functions exercised by the Defence Force, including those performed in respect of the airspace. Now, I know you're specifying just the airspace, but does the Defence Force not only also have maritime responsibilities, and is there a reason why we're not including that instead of just the airspace? On the next page, page 4.
No, why don't we just go through this very one that you've raised?
I'm happy.
When you open the bill itself on the preamble, there is a paragraph that says, acknowledging further the constitutional responsibility of the South African National Defence Force to defend and protect the Republic, its territorial integrity and its people. That this bill actually recognizes the constitutional responsibility of the South African National Defence Force, wherever they are, in relation to that. So there isn't supposed to be any trampling of the Defence Force.
Yeah.
You can proceed if you have just taken note of that part. It actually paints the picture of the BMA, that it recognizes that the South African National Defence Force has got a constitutional mandate wherever, at any corner, the borders and the rest. So it is not trampled. Thank you.
I'm fine with the explanation. The point I'm trying to make, that if you're specifying just the one, I'm not sure why we're not specifying the other. So perhaps it's not even necessary to put in the airspace there. But if you put one, then I think that you should put the other. Let me just move on, Chair, so I can just get through these for your benefit. Clause 5, the functions of the authority. I'm referring there to 5 sub B, where we say facilitate and manage the legitimate movement of goods. That's the first part. But I notice that we've taken that out from the preamble. But now you refer to it again. Am I incorrect?
Yeah.
And then moving along in the same sentence, it says, facilitate and manage the legitimate movement of goods within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry. This is not a massive issue, but I mean, the point is, does the port of entry not include the border management area? So is it really necessary to include that and just simply say border law enforcement area? Because in all instances, it does include the port of entry, unless, of course, there is an instance where it doesn't include it. And then still under that same clause, under 5 sub D, You say cooperate and coordinate its border law enforcement functions with organs of state, border communities, or any other persons. I just think, Chair, that one, unless you're going to provide a definition for what border communities mean, it's very difficult to understand. I suspect that you're referring here to people living within the border area. But maybe we could just include a definition there, because I don't know whether a border community involves the private sector, or what exactly does it mean. Do you want to just deal with that clause, and then we can move to the next one?
Yeah, then
let's start right from the top. The first one, then you were worried about facilitated, managed, and legitimate movement of goods within the border law enforcement area and at ports of entry. Do you have a problem with that one? Because that's what is currently being done, you see, at the ports of entry. We are managing people crossing the border together with their goods and import goods as well they go through. Although is that at the moment it may be done by different organs of state. You see, so when you talk about fresh meat, then involve people from agriculture and the rest. Then the persons, then they are dealt with by immigration officers, their passports, and then the goods, and then the customs officials and the checking. But then when you bring all those things under the PMA, then holistically it is managing the legitimate movement of persons and goods across our ports of entry.
Yeah, Chair, I'm not sure that you're understanding the point I'm making, so let me maybe just take you through it slowly. Let's just go to the actual bill itself, and let's read the preamble. Under the preamble, it says, recognizing further that there is a need for integrated and coordinated border management that facilitates secure travel and legitimate trade in accordance with the Constitution. I'll stop there. That's what it says at the moment. Now let's go to the A-list. And if you go to the A-list under preamble, point one, it says to omit that facilitates secure travel and legitimate trade. So your A-list is suggesting we remove that part from the preamble. In other words, it's suggesting that this bill doesn't deal with legitimate trade and move, if you're taking it out from the preamble. But then further on in the A-list, which is what I'm referring to now, under Clause 5, we refer again back to the movement of goods. And the point I'm trying to make is that either you leave it in the preamble, or you take it out of Clause 5. But you can't in the preamble on the one hand say this thing is not dealing with the movement of goods, but then in another clause you include the wording movement of goods. Perhaps a legal advisor must give us a views on it.
Yeah, let's just hear Honorable Gumede first, and then we'll get to swear.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I think one of the submissions, and I think it was from BUSA, which said that we were more concerned about illicit goods crossing the borders, and we were not interested in making sure that we facilitated legal trade facilitating legal trade passing through the ports of entry. That was part of their submission. And then under the preamble, I do not think that it would be not within that spirit to have that as part of the preamble to facilitate and manage legitimate movement of persons and goods. I think. I would support him if he said that let us then do that. It doesn't remove anything, but instead it reinforces number 5A. Because that was the concern expressed by one of the stakeholders.
Yeah. I think what's on the preamble, what we are removing, we're removing the facilitation of secure travel and legitimate trade. but we are not removing legitimate movement of goods across, because that's what we are doing. Let's hear from Sue Ann.
Chairperson, just to clarify, it was more of a drafting issue. So if you read that sentence where we removed, in the bill as introduced, we removed that facilitates secure travel and trade in the third point of the preamble. But if you look at the drop-down list, bullet point 3, it says contribute to the facilitation of legitimate trade and secure travel. So if you read the first sentence with the third bullet, it's repetitive. So in your first line, you're saying the you need to facilitate secure travel and trade, and in order to contribute to facilitate secure travel and trade. So it was more a drafting issue to make it cleaner. So if you read that whole paragraph now, you would see that it would make sense, and that has not been removed. It was just removed in the first line because it didn't make sense when you read it.
Chair, I'm satisfied. So the intention was not to remove the principle of movement of goods from the preamble. It was merely just for cleaning up.
Because that is the main function, really, of
all
the
PMA. Yeah, I'm fine. Can I move on to the next one?
Yes.
I don't know whether you want to deal with the issue of the border communities now and its definition before I move to the next one.
Well, we can just hear from Sven, but I don't think that there is any confusion about border communities. Once somebody talks about the border communities, all of us, we know that we're talking about the communities that are around the border, and some of them as well include even those that are the other side. You see, you have got communities of one chief or one Induna that stretches across the boundary, and then they form a border community. Then there must be some sort of special arrangements. Otherwise, if they have a passport, then the passport in 2 months or 3 months, it will be full. If it is stamped, then that's why then there are specific arrangements. Otherwise, then I don't know, but I really think that there is no real confusion on that one. Maybe Suen is, you can assist us.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, if the word is not defined, then the plain English dictionary definition is what we would read it as. So border communities, I would take it as being the communities living on the border. I don't think there's confusion as to who it's referring to. Mm. Chairperson, I think the plain English meaning of it is clear.
Mm. As far as I'm concerned, it is self-explanatory. And again, it's not every community that is just living close to the border. The community that would always wants to have something to do the other side of the border, frequently, that cannot go to an ordinary, normal port of entry, which may be 200 kilometers away from them to go and cross and come back, and then you have to make arrangements. Those that are just affected by the border, being a community there, either having relatives across or whatever, or shopping complexes across, but that requires them to cross the border time and again. That is the border community that is being referred here.
Can I deal with the next one?
Thank you.
Chair, clause 7, you'd recall there in the last submission that I made, Chair, I suggested that this clause include some provision that specifies the suitability of the person. I thought that it was far too vague, and the analogy I used there was that even a school principal can qualify for this job based on these requirements, and that there should be some level of appropriate security experience be included in there. But if the committee felt it's not necessary, I'm just putting it on the table again that I think it should be included. Then, Chair, I just want to take you to 71B. And then further down in that clause, it says successfully complete the appropriate prescribed training. Again, you'll recall the point that I made was that completing it successfully doesn't necessarily mean passing it. And I heard the comments of the legal advisor earlier when she had suggested that they've included the word prior to in another clause further down on the amendments under, I think it was clause 13. I'll deal with that part when we get there. But if that is a suitable inclusion, then perhaps you want to include prior to under this clause as well. You're successfully completing it doesn't mean successfully passing it. It's quite ambiguous, if I can put it that way. I can complete my driver's license, but I don't necessarily pass it. And it's the point that we made previously. I mean, unless you want to specify it, and it does specify in the clause elsewhere, where in the bill, and I'll come to that part, where we did say must pass. And I promise you, this is not an insignificant matter, but you think about it. It's entirely up to you. I'm putting it on the table, and you must decide how you want to deal with it.
No, let's start right at 7 at the top, we say. The president must appoint a commissioner who is a fit and proper person. A fit and proper person. Now, this opens up that if there are any regulations that needs to be promulgated, you know, to actually define what is a fit and a proper person, then that can be done, either in terms of regulation. But there is a provision that forms a basis. And then the second one, the B, possesses tertiary qualifications appropriate to the post, which means is that now we are going to have a situation where when they have to advertise for the commissioner, there must be a determination what is the appropriate qualifications that are required, blah, 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 blah. Then they write all sorts of things. Whether then it is done in the regulations to assist that when they advertise, they just simply make reference to the regulations, and then they do so. But then we're speaking about having in the hands the qualifications appropriate to the post. Not that it's still studying. No. It's already passed. And then holds a minimum of 10 years appropriate senior management experience. Can you see that the net is closing? It's closing. It's getting very tight. Very tight. Very tight. But then also we acknowledge that you may have this person that has got all these qualifications, being a proper person, and then having the 10 years appropriate senior management. But then the question is, this person may be coming from Canada. Then you say, no, he must be a South African citizen. Close it again. Not everybody. And then now, we then say again, is it doesn't matter whether he's a fit and proper person, he's got necessary qualifications, he's got 10 years, he's a South African. But if he's a South African that has been convicted or imprisoned without an option of a fine, then that person we don't want. Then it also eliminates some. It eliminates some. It actually makes it tighter and tighter and tighter. And then we have got this other one that says, has a trustworthy and exemplary character. The regulations may come in and actually clarify this. What is an exemplary character that we're talking about? What is that? But I mean, we know that if it's a person that was working with children, has abused children, we can't say that that is an exemplary character. We can't. And then the problem, the question of course, is the number of these kind of things that can be leveled. This actually empowers those that are on the interview. Like what we have seen in the interviews that they've gone with an inspector general, with the public protector. They have actually applied this trustworthy and exemplary character. They have actually questioned them. We're listening. It empowers those that are actually interviewing. But I mean, it's not going to be very easy and possible that you can write every little sentence and quantify it in a manner that it just gets applied and everybody knows the answer, that the answer is this. And so the judgment will be left with those that are interviewing. the character that is picked on the application, and the rest of the documentation supplied with the applications. Then they will be analyzing that, and then they will be determining whether then they can prove and find the particular character of the applicant. And then this empowers those that are actually doing that. Now also we say that is the commissioned officer or must subsequent to his appointment successfully complete the appropriate prescribed training, which means is that completion is the one that must make the person to be a commissioned officer. If he has not passed, then he can't be a commissioned officer. Then he doesn't qualify. But if he attends that particular training successfully, in a manner that he qualifies to be appointed as a commissioned officer like the rest, then it is fine. Of course, is that also must successfully undergo an appropriate security clearance process. Security clearance. Can you imagine if you are the president of this country and then you have got somebody that you don't know his character in relation to security? You can't appoint that person to this kind of an institution because it can undermine your rule and bring foreign forces through there. So the security clearance is important. Also, if you look at all of them together, you'll see that it's been tightened. It's going to be very difficult for anybody to really go through there with dubious current. Without the, of course, is that the question of people that comes with fake qualifications is a problem that is almost everywhere in the public service, which means is that those that does the interview, they will have an added responsibility to ensure that the qualifications that are presented in front of them are genuine qualifications. Unless if they wanted to actually really misrepresent the country. Otherwise, if they are genuine panelists, then they have to verify the qualifications that are genuine. Suen?
Sure,
I talk too much. And I just hope that I did not talk nonsense.
I agree with what you said. Just the one about successfully complete. I mean, complete something and successfully complete something. I think successfully is even more of an adjective to describe that you must have passed. So I can't, I mean, to get a certificate as well at the end, you will have to successfully complete it, or you don't get a security clearance certificate.
Chair, I want to respectfully disagree with our good lady here. Let me tell you why.
Let she finish.
I think she has.
Are you done?
I might talk.
Okay.
Let me take her to clause. Go to clause 13.4 of your A list, and you'll see there an official who refuses to subject himself or herself to an appropriate security clearance process. You included the words "or who fails such process." That's an inclusion, based from the discussion we had previously. That is an inclusion. It doesn't say who successfully completed. You put in the words there, who failed such process, very clear. It means if you fail, you buggered. There's a big difference between successfully completing and failing. It's a very big difference. And it can be left to interpretation. I can interpret it as I've completed this thing successfully. I'm not compelled to pass it. So if you suggest that successfully completed is sufficient, why don't just use those words, or fail such process? I mean, that's very simple. It takes out the ambiguity. Because that's what you want in a piece of legislation, is to remove all ambiguity, right?
Clause 13, which one are you referring to? Because 13.4 doesn't talk about successful security clearance process.
On the A list.
Yes. It just talks about somebody subjecting to an appropriate security clearance process. And then that's the first part of it. Just simply to subject yourself. Yes, and then now the next part then talks about the person then now who failed the process. Who failed the process? You see. I don't understand what is the challenge yet as compared to the other side where the person is saying successfully, complete. And
can I explain it to you again and then you'll understand the point I'm making? Let me just deal with it one by one.
Yeah, when you succeed, that means you have passed or you have complied with the requirement. And then when you have not passed, you have not complied with the requirement, you have failed. It's the opposite. I really don't. Maybe if you can go further to try and clarify whatever we're not really understanding properly. I don't know. But when you have succeeded in your matric, that means you have passed your matric.
So then.
And then not that you have just attended matric for the whole year. And then you say, no, I've successfully completed matric, but without even passing the exam. And then I'm failing to understand. Let me just be open. I think those that have done English A must assist us here, because I've done English B anyway. Yes.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Let's ask the good lady from the legal office to respond. If she says she's satisfied based on this, I'm going to move on. I'm putting it on the table. It's
all
her
right.
responsibility to deal with it.
All right. You may proceed, Sue.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, I think just with regard to Clause 13.4, the issue there was what happens during the term of a person being employed as an official. So you have initially got into the BMA, and then when you're being subjected to a security clearance process during the time of your employment, and you firstly refuse to do so, and secondly when you fail your security clearance. So 13.4b was dealing with people who are already in the employ, they don't want to be subjected to a further clearance, or they fail, and then what do you do with them? Then you subject them to a disciplinary process, because they're already employees. This Clause 17 is the requirement for you to be successfully appointed as a commissioner or a deputy commissioner. They are your entry requirements. So if you fail that, then if you don't get your certificate, then you don't meet the requirements at the first stage. So you won't be appointed. I don't see the success being interpreted differently as to have gotten the clearance certificate that says you qualify to be part of this or to be appointed to this post, because if you don't, then you would say you failed. It's just the opposite. Success and failure are just the opposites of each another. So if you say you successfully you successfully obtained the certificate, it means that you met the requirements and you qualify to be appointed for the post. And in 14B, we're talking about the opposite situation where you fail to get a certificate and now you're going to be subjected to a disciplinary hearing. So it's just the opposite words. I think the clear English meaning is interpretable, and there's no confusion as to what its success means from my side.
I'm going to move on, Chair. She's done her job. If she's not done it, then it's her responsibility. It's accountability, yes.
At least it was a feminine voice. Continue.
But just to get a clarity, on the same one.
Okay.
Just the clarity is that other people will be employed, not going through the vetting. And then in the middle, they will be expected to do the vetting. That's what this clause talked to.
No. You see, what is happening is that vetting will be a prerequisite for appointment.
For everyone?
Yes. And then while you are employed, there will be certain times that officers will be subjected to security clearance. Remember that people change, you know, as time goes on. They become different animals. And then there may be prescribed times or intervals or whatever where officers then must go and actually subject themselves to a security clearance. Then there is a possibility that an officer who may be knowing that he has got dubious character refuse to go for security clearance or agree and subject to go but then and fail security clearance while at the time of employ has actually passed. So the circumstances will have changed. And then now the question is what happens then at that time. So that is now the disciplinary process that is being proposed on that particular clause. Mm-hmm. And then you may proceed, Honorable Hussein. Honorable Shope is damn happy.
No, I'm not damn happy.
No, but the explanation I can get. Not the bill.
I'm not damn happy.
Not the bill.
I thought that's what she was saying. Because yeah. She even said the commissioners, is the prerequisite for the commissioners.
Yeah.
When they apply for the job, they must go through the process of vetting.
Yes.
So that's why I want to clarify. Not everyone, it's only the commissioners now.
No, it's all. Except, of course, is that there may be certain officers under different classes that it may not be necessary. But this is a security establishment. That's the first instance, which, depending on the people that are in charge, may decide that everybody that works there, because everybody, even a cleaner at the port of entry, can create a lot of damage and hurt to the country. By just simply releasing information from your desk, from those that are actually vetted, and then have that particular hand that actually subject the country. You may proceed.
Chairperson, just to clarify the member's question, clause 13.3 says every person to be appointed as an official, that's on page 7, every person to be appointed as an official must, prior to appointment, successfully have undergone an appropriate security clearance process. So anyone who comes into the BMA before that, they must have gotten the certificate. And the second one deals with where you are at the BMA as an official, and the certificates have a time frame. They last for a period of time, and then you have to be re-vetted. So say someone is working at the BMA for 5 years, and now it's time to get a new certificate, and they refuse. 13.4 deals with that instance, where you're already there, but now you need to be re-vetted, and you refuse. So prior, you must get it, but while you're there, you also have to be subjected to further security clearance.
Honorable Hussein?
Yeah, Chair, can I just move to clause 9? And just to make the point that it's clause 9.1e. I'm concerned there about that on account of loss of confidence in the commissioner or a deputy commissioner. I think one needs it must specify what loss of confidence means. Or else, you know, I'm very concerned about, given the current situation that we're in, anyone who disagrees with our president currently loses confidence in him. So you can just take them out whenever he so chooses. That's something that the politicians can deal with. So do you mind? You want me to move on, or stop there?
No. Let's finish this 9E1E. On account of a loss of confidence in the commissioner or a deputy commissioner. As it is not clear what can erode the loss of confidence. Which means is that these would actually require regulations. Regulations have to be promulgated to actually amplify this. What this would mean to the people that will be actually implementing this particular. Otherwise, if they had to actually do that here, then we can have this bill to be a book like that. And then, and again, is that the things that can lead to loss of confidence may change over time. You can prescribe today, and tomorrow then people have developed differently, different characteristics, and then they actually find a home, and then they squeeze through that one. And then, but all what it means is that these make an entry for a regulation to be promulgated.
Yeah, I'm satisfied with the explanation.
Then me and you, when those regulations come here, you must look at that. What are they saying about that in the regulations? And then we'll question that, then we'll seek clarity from them. How are they going to manage this one? But up to now, we really know some of the things that the presidents have lost the confidence in the NPA boss, the Vusi Pikolis, and you name all of them, and then all those sorts of things. There is a body that is actually taking shape on the things that really say that this one now can't trust this one. But when they are supposed to work together, the other one feeding the other one, but then there is a wall in between, then how do you expect them to operate together? Then it becomes very difficult. And but that body is taking shape. I think the court knows exactly what will that mean. But I'm sure even ourselves as politicians, it is taking a little bit of shape. Even in politics, I'm sure you do have those things happening, you know, people resigning from parties, others being removed from a certain position then to the other one. And then I'm sure you remember that, I think another party this past week has reshuffled its leadership in parliament. And then some of these things, then they start playing in those particular areas. Although it is not being said that, but it's the thing that actually moves underneath and then says, well, who is the best? And then we promote that who is the best for the position. But we don't say that, no, the one that was holding, we no longer have confidence. We don't say that. We only try to say the positive side, this now is the better than to lead here. It is taking shape. But like as I'm saying, is that always is that these kind of clauses will require a very serious explanation from in the regulation.
Chair, I'm satisfied with the explanation.
Yeah.
If you believe that, as I do, that it's too vague, if you believe that it should be included in the regulations, then may I propose that you include such a clause there that says so, that the regulations must describe the conditions under which the President can consider, or words to that effect.
Even the process
of
removing that particular person, it must be clarified in the regulation.
Yeah, but that's what you're saying now.
Yes.
It might not necessarily happen.
That's what I'm saying. There is the regulations. Me and you, we must check that they have actually explained the parameters.
No. When we come to the regulations, you will forget. That's why I'm saying.
You
will say it now as a means to try and kick this thing
me
out.
And you.
But if you believe in what I'm saying, that it's too vague, and if you believe that it should be in the regulations, then let's all of us agree to include a clause that says such. Because if you say no, then it means that you're now just kicking it for touch.
No. Honorable Hussein, it is many clauses in this bill that requires further explanations in regulations. Like the very same one that we spoke about on the qualifications that says possesses tertiary qualifications appropriate to the post. At the moment you don't know which are those. But you realize that when the regulations comes, will be actually clarified, because they will now have done the necessary research and all that. What are the qualifications that a commissioner of this kind of an institution have? And then now you'll be having those. But qualifications changes. The universities, they actually batter these qualifications, chop and change certain requirements. And then over time, then it may change. Then they are able to amend the regulations without actually amending the principal act. And if we are always going to write a sentence that this must be in regulations, then I think we are going to insert that kind of sentence 100 times in this bill. But all what we are saying is that any act that has got a provision which is not clear, then it gets clarified through the regulations and guidelines on how it must be undertaken. So me and you, we expect that we will be seeing some sort of regulations in terms of the appropriate qualifications that we're talking about. They're prescribed at the bottom G, 7G, where it talks about the prescribed, there is the program, the security program that has now to be attended. What is that? And then we expect that that will be reflected in the regulations. And then this one as well is the loss of confidence. What will be regarded as loss of confidence? What is the process when you have lost the confidence? Do you just simply fire the person tomorrow? No. Then the process will be stipulated in the regulations. That's what I'm trying to say. But to put that sentence that this must be in the regulations, then it's quite a lot where we are going to insert that. But it is the principle of lawmaking that I've come across since I've been here.
Okay,
so that's why I'm actually saying to us that all the areas that need further clarification, me and you, as we have requested in terms of this bill, that the regulations, the ordinary regulations, the departments make the regulations and just simply promulgate them the other side and then it's finished. But with this one, we said that they must come here so that then we have an opportunity to look at the things that we need further clarification rather than trying to clarify them in this act and make this particular document clumsy and big and unreadable.
Yeah, let me move on, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. If you just look further down in clause 9.2, then firstly, loss of confidence must be an objective standard. It's not something that because the President feels that way, he must be able to have reasons and evidence to justify why he feels loss of confidence. And in the process he set out in 9.2, the President may suspend the Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner, and there must be an investigation into the circumstances referred into 1, and this must be finalized at least within 60 days. So there is a process that's already set out, and if this the loss of confidence results in a dismissal, it must be something that can be justified, or the Commissioner or Deputy Commissioner can take the matter on review to court and say these reasons were flimsy and don't meet an objective standard and my dismissal was not fair. But yeah, it's not, the President has to have sound reasons to justify why he has lost confidence in the person.
Yeah, and the last resort is that even the commissioner or the deputy commissioner that will be removed as such, then still has the right to go to a court of law.
Yeah, Che, you see, anything can go to court. You can review anything,
yes.
But the whole purpose of writing things into legislation is to prevent that from happening in the first place. Now, if you read this, and I disagree with the good lady's suggestion there, because those things are specified, and if you take out A to D, for example, or if you just ignore that for a moment, and as you read it, it says that the President may remove the Commissioner from his or her office on account of a loss of confidence in the Commissioner. It doesn't go on to say on account of loss of confidence in the commissioner, provided sections A and up to D are respected. It doesn't say that. It's not linked. It's entirely separate, and it can be acted upon separately. It can, if you read it the way it is. It means the President can remove somebody purely on account of loss of confidence. That's his right in the law. That's what it says. I'm saying that that's not acceptable, that there should be provisions under which He can argue that he's lost confidence. If you're saying that it must be in the regulations, my argument is that, well, we should specify it. If you disagree, then I disagree, and let's just move on.
No, let us not think this thing in that manner, Honorable Hussein. you see, this act provides the conditions under which a commissioner or a deputy commissioner may be removed. Not a commissioner will be removed, may be removed. But then, for this commissioner to be removed, then you have got this 9 is 9-2. 9-2 the other side. That involves all the other requirements of removing a person.
In addition to, not
yes. No, but remember that there are acts that governs officers. There are acts that governs officials of the state that prescribe the processes that needs to be done. You can't just simply say because now you are ill health, then you are gone. I mean, it is not expected to happen like that because there are acts that protect officials of the state that requires a particular process to be done, then explanation, and also hear the other side of, you know, it's the very same person that you say you want to remove because of ill health. That person has got the right in terms of other piece of legislation, you know, to be heard. And then you, then 9-2 then talks about possibly it's either the person is that there is an investigation that has to be done, where there is a need of an investigation, and then whether the person being suspended or still on duty, then while you are carrying on with that investigation and the rest. Don't read these completely out of the rest of the legislations that we have that protect officials. But this forms the basis to say, on these ones that are here, then the president can remove this, but then the process of removing that person then has to actually recognize all other pieces of legislation and even the rights in the constitution that protect these particular officials in their own rights as individuals.
I have to go. It's fine, I'm still
okay.
No, Chair, I just want to say that I need to go. I have another meeting. And by the look of things, it looks like it's going to take too long to engage on with this document with Honorable Hussein. But I will...
We are finished.
No, you don't know. Maybe you're still going to engage you from all other pages.
I just have two items left.
But on the very same issue that he is raising on this clause, Chair, Mina Bengzo proposed Uguti, let us just delete all these clauses that is giving the President the power for the current situation now until the President is removed. Chair, in the serious note.
We can't make an act for a particular individual.
Chair, no. In the serious note.
The test of time.
Yeah,
irrespective of whether you become a president tomorrow.
We'll amend.
This act must stand.
Chair, on a serious note, on page four, before I leave, Chair, on page four, close, it's 5C. That talks about facilitate the collection of revenue. I think, Chair, this was not clarified. This thing has been the bone of contention in this committee. And now it's here on this clause. And when I attended the programming committee on Wednesday, when Mr. Shabalala was presenting the bills that are before Parliament, on his presentation he said the Home Affairs is dealing with this bill, but now we're still waiting for SARS, the agreement between Home Affairs and SARS. So I need that clarification, because now I can see this thing has been... It's here now, as close for, as 4C. Uguti, maybe what is the status regarding, because last time we told that there will be a meeting between the two ministers to resolve over this issue, before I leave.
Yeah, I think I tried to clarify that. Probably maybe that's the time when you are still out to trying to coordinate some other few things. We tried to clarify that. That we have provided this in terms of the cabinet decision, and then this provision here, it was actually a compromise
one.
Yes. Remember that what we are saying was that initially that the BMA was supposed to be actually doing everything that is done by customs at the ports of entry. But because of the SARS or the Treasury trying to actually protect the activities of SARS or customs, then we said that, well, BMA then would not do that to collect revenue on its own as a revenue collector. It will facilitate the collection of revenue for SARS. That is in terms of the penalties or whatever that are charged to people that misbehave at the ports of entry. All of those penalties in terms of goods and trade, and then it's revenue collected to SARS. And then it is not the only one. I think there is another one at the end that talks to the finances, that the finances of the BMA will exclude revenue that is actually derived from customs operations. That would not form part of the money of the BMA. We have excluded that. You see, those are the compromises after having had Treasury and SARS on this particular matter. That the figure.
Shepherdson, I'm sorry, man. On the same question, I just want to find out: did the meeting take place between the deputy president and the ministers, and what was the outcome, if they did?
Yeah, it looks like the meeting has taken place. There has been exchanges between the two ministers, and I understood that there were expectations of the DGs and then to exchange certain documentation. But then the question that we are having now ourselves is that they have not finalized it. They have not finalized it. But then what we have provided here captures the cabinet decision. But then with that particular relaxation to accommodate SARS, you see. So we expect that the bill as it was at the beginning is the cause of that particular challenge that we have referred to the Deputy President. But then in the process, then these particular compromises have been made during our own engagement. And then to say, if Customs doesn't want its operations at the ports of entry to go to the BMA, then let us try and protect them. We close the hole at the port of entry, that there is no other gate that customs officials can go from inland to outland. But then the finances that comes in, and the penalties that comes through the operations of trade and goods, then goes to SARS as a tax revenue collector. Still goes there. And then all what's collected at the port of entry doesn't go to the kitty of the BMA. No. It doesn't form part of the BMA income. Still goes directly to SARS. That was the compromise that had been made. And then that is what also has been put up there in relation to that, to say that at the level of the committee now here, these are the compromises that we have made. And we generally expect that that particular meeting at the end of the day will recognize this particular compromise that we've made. But at the end of the day, let us not forget that we are only consulting them. We are only consulting them because we have the mandate to make the law how we want them to operate. That is our responsibility. Yes. So, as a committee, then we are comfortable with the provisions that we have made. And then we consult them. You know, it will always be nice if, even from that side, then there is some sort of an agreement. That makes things very nice. And then, but I mean, if they fail to come to a particular conclusion, at the end of the day, is that you here and then have that mandate. We are representing the people of South Africa to make sure that this particular institution is established and how it should function. It's our responsibility. And then the second issue now that we are faced with is that, honorable members, we are left with only next week meeting. And now this requires us to move from this A list then to an amended bill. And only this A list, when we finish it today, then will assist for this to be produced. And once this is produced, then you must come and actually now read all of them, that into the current bill. Read the amendment in the current bill, all of them now, clause by clause. And then I will be having the document that we want to pass. And that is the document that must go to the NCOP. And in principle, for now, it needs about 3 meetings. But we are left with 1 meeting. So we need to be a little bit time efficient with it, to a certain extent. I think I've tried to explain now to you, Honourable Sopem Kalipi. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll get used to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. And have you committed?
In fact, thank you, Chairperson. No, the Honorable Chairperson is just a plea from Honorable Hussein to assist us. I know he's got the capacity, and make proposals where he is not clear. Make proposals where he is not clear, so that perhaps we can manage the process better and then see whether we agree with proposals or not. This thing of leaving things as questions makes it very difficult for all of us. Thank you. Because I know he's got the capacity.
Well, we know. It's, the only challenge is that I'm sure it's the third time now. In three meetings, raising almost exactly the same thing. And I just hope that today maybe it's gonna help us to move over.
Yeah, I'm trying to help you. You don't want to help yourself.
The issue is that when you raise things and then they got explained and clarified, but we still the next day find ourselves exactly on the same thing. And then, but I mean, when you raise it, there is no way that we can just ignore you. Somebody has to respond. You see, and then that's what makes us now to continue to respond to even although exactly the same things that we have tried to explain. But at the end of the day, remember that it is not possible to craft a piece of legislation that it makes everybody happy, because we're coming from different corners, we have got different perceptions. You know, like, I mean, it's Honorable Sobe, as you are saying, it's ringing that has got certain persons in mind. No, these powers you are giving it to President Zuma. Then she has got problems with that. We are creating a piece of legislation that should stand the test of time under any president of any political party. Immaterial whether the political party is still going to be established, or it is one of the ones that we are having. But this piece of legislation must not become trash because a new president from another party has been elected. And then this now is no longer standing because it was crafted for a particular president that is actually ruling the country. No. Let's put the act that even yourself tomorrow, if you happen to be likely to take power, you must find this piece of legislation operable. You must be able to define with if you have lost confidence in whoever is running this, you'll be knowing what that means. And then you should be able to deal with it. But I mean, if you start putting nuts and bolts because of a particular circumstance, when you come in, then you have to undo the bolt, because now it is you. You see, all those fears, now they are gone. That can be proper legislative process. Legislative process must be genuine, irrespective of the incumbents at the particular time, but create a piece of legislation that will assist any government that is in power to be able to run and manage its affairs. That's what we are trying to do. And hence, which are the other two?
Yeah, Chair, may I just deal with just the principle of it and make just a few points in response? I'm not going to respond to everything that you said, but more especially not to show disrespect to Honourable Gumede, and I appreciate the point that he's made. But I want to just simply say this. If there's a document on the table, and if there's a proposal, and for as long as it's in front of me, I'm going to speak on it. If you want me to stop speaking on it, then don't table it. But for as long as it's here, you must respect that we have a role to play in this process, and I'm going to speak on it. I'm sorry that it gets frustrating that you have to hear it for three times, but if you table it for three times, I'll speak on it for three times. So if you want to stop listening to me, then, you know, change the agenda. Let me just say that firstly. Secondly, I also say that from the very beginning, and I think you will agree, that I did, on behalf of my party, did everything that I could to try and assist the process by making proposals and recommendations, but on the same token, recognizing that we're going to disagree on some of them. And some of them we have agreed on, and I see that those adjustments have been made, and I respect that. But in order for me to be able to deal with them, I have to put them on the table. And if you disagree, I'll move on. I speak for 1 minute, you speak for five. And I move on, and you want to come back to it. So I have a responsibility to put it on the record. And if we disagree, then we disagree. I respect that. And that's, unfortunately, the environment in which we operate, and then we move on. But let me just continue with the last two items, and then let's just see if we can make some progress. But I just want to give my good friend, Honorable Gumede, the assurance that I will continue to do whatever I can to act responsibly, but I have to do what I have to do, unfortunately. Chair, the second to last one is under Clause 17, and you don't have to respond to this, but I have to put it on record. I'm extremely comfortable with 17C on screening of communications between officers and any other person within or outside of the authority in its current form. To me that sounds like it's spying on employees. I understand the purpose of it and why it's there, but I think it gives far too much of powers to the officials to do as they please. It's a significant matter, although I appreciate why it's there, but I think that there must be some safety measures that's either included in the regulations or wherever, but it's just absolutely not acceptable in its current form. It's essentially saying we're giving the BMA the authority to spy on its officers, and I can't agree with that, unless to solve the problem you could seek a court order in those circumstances. And I know the counter-argument will be is that, well, it'll defeat the purpose by getting a court order. But I know that you can get a court order without defeating the purpose, so I'm putting that on record. And the last one is a very easy one. It's just merely a question.
Just before you get to that one, how about raising this when you debate the bill in the House?
I will.
The regulations then must actually spell out how is this screening going to happen.
Sure. Well, I was hoping that we can agree here before we even
have to debate. It will assist in the promulgation of the regulations. But that you expect something to happen on this specific one. Let's hear Gumede.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think this is according to the present law. If intelligence wants to intercept anybody, they've got to get it through a judge. There is a dedicated judge that is there. Where if you want to screen or intercept communications, you've got to get their permission and giving evidence that has made you believe that you have a right to override the person's right to privacy. I think it is there is that law, and then perhaps what we can find out is whether this is going to operate outside of this that law. But I think if there is going to be intelligence office, they are bound to do within it within certain terms, and it is in the intelligence law.
Yeah, I think there are laws that actually govern interception of communications of persons. Hence, that's why you always get visit the courts and get a court order to do so. And then you must satisfy them that you really think that you have got prima facie evidence that there is wrongdoing, and then we do those kind of things. So, but like as I'm saying, is that you can make noise about it so that it gets attention in the regulations, and then even ourselves, when the regulations comes here, let's make sure that we see whether there's anything that has been done in that relation, where in the regulations they are making reference to particular piece of legislation that governs communications and interference to persons' communications. Then we just simply double check that those things have happened. You may proceed.
Chair, the last one is just deals with clause 23, and just this is a question of clarity. 23C says any other money is legally acquired by it, subject to treasury regulations. I'll just skip ahead. Excluding revenue collected in terms of 5C. Is that 5C you're referring to, the 5C of BMA or PFMA? That's just a question.
5C of
I don't think it's 5C of BMA because that has no relevance. Well, I'm not sure that 5C.
Look at it's the income from customs activities. That's one that I was explaining before.
5C is functions of the authority.
Yes.
In terms of 5C, cooperate and coordinate with other organs of state, border communities, or any other persons on its border law enforcement function. It's nothing about collecting of revenue there.
No. You're reading the wrong document. Look at the AB on page 4. I think that's what I say, that you've made compromises. And the compromise that you've made, 5C, it says,
okay.
The collection of revenue.
It's 5C of the A list, not 5C
yes.
of the. Fine.
Okay.
Sorted. Thank you.
In reference to the compromise. We're trying to exclude the money that comes through the Okay.
Thank you very much, Chief.
You're helping us. Are you moving for the approval of this A list?
No.
I actually move for the withdrawal of it.
I mean for the whole year to adopt the whole year. Is that what you are moving?
No, Chair, I'm satisfied. You can put the proposal,
okay.
You can understand that I'm not going to agree to it.
Honorable Sibian, you have been trying to raise your hand.
No, I'm
giving you an opportunity.
No, I didn't raise that.
You've got nothing to say?
Oh, you want me to say something? No, I also support that we withdraw the
case. Oh, you support the approval of the
No.
Okay, I think now with all the clarities made, and then certain things, you know, I agree with Honorable Hussein that there are certain things that we may disagree, but all of us, we are trying to do it in the best interest of the country, because we need to establish this particular unit to really ensure our security at our ports of entry and the borders. And I think it is really our intention, all of us, to make sure that this unit is established. All other intentions were that this gets established by the 1st of April, but not necessarily establishing that you will get to a port of entry and find people clad in a uniform of the BMA. It's not going to happen that way, because there will be processes and transitional arrangements and all that. You need to first get the office, you must get the commissioner, and then they must sort out the rules of the game, and then all sorts of guidelines for the BMA has to be drafted and whatever. And then there is an establishment process that's going to follow. And we may not see a marked change that at our port of entry now you have a BMA for the next year or two. Because the first thing is you must actually establish the bureaucracy of this particular entity before you actually really see things happening on the ground. And people also, the process of transferring officials from one organ of state to the other is still, we may not see it ourselves because we hardly have 2 years yet. Ourselves are lucky to those that will find themselves coming back in 2019. But, you know, we are actually assisting the state to be able to establish this unit. And it is likely to be your legacy.
Your
legacy. No, I may not come back. Yeah, your legacy as the committee that is actually processing this piece of legislation. I take note that you say you want us to scrap everything, but know that it's going to be your legacy, and then irrespective what position you have taken. And on the basis that you have made a lot of contribution to this particular bill, and it will be your baby. It will be unfortunate in the House if you say that you don't support it. It's expected of opposition parties to oppose anything that can be opposed, but it will be your legacy. Having participated all the way and having made important contributions in this particular process. And right. And then is there anyone then who would like to move for us to agree on this A list? Honorable members, we need to make progress. And then in any way, this says when we are finished with this one, it will assist us to get to make our B bill. And then so the train will be moving. The bill would only find its finality when it goes through the NCOP, which we expect that then, if we do our job correctly ourselves, then they should be able to deal with it in February and finish it. Honorable Gumede, what's your view?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you to all the members for the contributions and many of which were valuable. From our side, we propose acceptance of this draft of the bill at this stage, and then so that perhaps it forms the basis of the formulation of the B draft. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and then who's supporting Honorable Gumede? Mam Kenya, go on record.
I support Honorable Gumede. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And then I think then this will be a milestone today on this particular legislative process. And then this will now assist Swen. The surname is gone. Swen Isaacs. Yes. Okay. Yes. And then for them to actually work on this particular document. And then, but like as I've said, honorable members, the biggest challenge is the time that is left for us to be able to process this. And then, but let's see what happens in if they can actually integrate this A list to this, and then we'll hope that we may make plans. We may have 2 meetings next week. Then the next issue, the Congolese. We have received a referral from the referral from the speaker about an unsolicited memoranda from the Congolese, but what they are doing, is that they are asking us to scrap the immigration policy. And officially, officially we don't have the immigration policy in front of us. We don't have that, and when it is in front of us, they then have an opportunity to come and make any representation as an interested party. And then also, of course, is that we are busy with the refugee amendment bill, which some of the issues that actually affect them may be part of the refugee amendment bill. They are welcome to come and actually address the committee. But for now, in terms of their memorandum, it's not worthwhile to really talk to this particular memorandum now, because we don't have that immigration policy in front of us. And in principle, that is what we would have loved to actually indicate to the speaker, that there is no issue now. You see, they are raising an issue on another process of government, when government has actually dealt with the policy formulation, the other side, but it has not yet reached parliament. But then already now they want us to actually scrap it, even before it arrives to us. And hence, there is no issue. I think there is a draft letter or response that has been prepared. That has been prepared, and I think all of you should be having a copy of it. It is addressed to the speaker with the heading "Unsolicited Submission from the Congolese Community." And let me just go through the letter. Of course, the letter is addressed to the speaker. And then it says, "Your letter dated 20 October 2016 relating to the submission by the Western Cape branch of the Congolese community on 30 September refers. This matter was raised by the committee in a meeting on 29 November 2016 and the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs does consider matters related to refugees and migrants as part of its oversight mandate. However, the committee are yet to specifically deal with the green paper on migration. The letter from WCCC does refers to a bill contained within policy, but it is unclear which bill. Given that the Congolese immigrants are often refugees and asylum seekers, they could well be referring to the refugees bill currently before our committee. There have been calls for submissions from stakeholders on the draft refugee bill, as well as initial public hearings. Oral and written submissions were made by a group of Congolese lawyers on 15 November 2016, but not by the WCCC. In addition, the Department of Home Affairs also called for submissions on the green paper by the end of September 2016, after prolonged engagements through various roundtable discussions from 2015 onwards. The DHA are yet to specifically present on the submission to the redrafted green paper, and it is not known if the WCCC made use of this opportunity to formally engage on the policy. In order to address the concerns of this body, the committee will specifically invite their representative to the second round of hearings and later deliberations on the refugee bill from 24 January 2017. Although they have missed formal opportunities to make submissions, they will be referred to liaise with organizations with similar concerns that will make oral submissions In addition, at such time as the committee deals with the Green Paper on Migration, probably in the second half of 2017, the WCCC will be invited to participate or attend deliberations. I trust this addresses matters raised in your letter, but please do not hesitate to contact myself for further clarity. That's what we're trying to... All what we are saying actually is that they are affected by matters of the refugee, and then they can attend, they can be invited, but in relation to this migration policy, it is not here. When it is here, then they will be invited to make submissions and like all other persons, and then engage at that level. Agreed?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I've read their memorandum. And firstly, I would say that in as far as they want to make inputs to the Green Paper, we agree that they should do so without any hindrance, like any other person that wishes to make a submission when we consider bills and doing matter issues of legislation. But number two, secondly, it looks like they believe that Parliament should do what has to be done by government. Some of the things that are listed here are not supposed to be done by government, by Parliament, but are supposed to be done by government. And then, for instance, they are saying all this is happening under your total indifference in a brotherly country, barely a few thousand kilometers away from your borders. And then we perceive your inaction as complicity. What happened, the massacre that took place in Miriki happened while the South African troops from the UN mission in Congo watched the Makai Kaiba scene a few hundred meters without intervening and so forth. And they say it is long established that these crimes are perpetrated by invaders from neighboring countries, namely Rwanda and Uganda, to decimate the Kivu populations in order to occupy their land. Sadly, our dead do not shake you. I think this, whereas this, we accept that they should make an input on migration, on immigration. They tend now to make political statements that Parliament cannot respond to. That the South African government also cannot respond to, given that we are having a multilateral approach to relations with other countries. For instance, these issues they present before us should be attended to at SADC, because we are both members of SADC with Democratic Republic of Congo at that level. And then we are both members of AU at that level. So perhaps Parliament can partake in the parliamentary, African Parliament, is it called? In the African Parliament, IPU. But we cannot make political statements here, whilst we know that these issues should be dealt with elsewhere. We cannot deal with issues of other countries and interfere in countries that are democratically elected, and they are recognized by SADC, they are recognized by AU, they are recognized by the United Nations. And therefore, we as a country who is a member of all those bodies cannot accept that the government of Congo is not democratically elected, because we accepted the results in the first place, and then we are members of all the bodies in which Congo is, and we believe that these matters can then be discussed at other forums despite Parliament. So one on immigration, we do not have a problem. Let them make a proposal. Two on other political matters, including peacemaking, I think there are other forums that can be dealt with. So definitely we sympathize and we accept our responsibility when it comes to immigration, but other issues seem to be out of the ambit of our operations as Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other person want to speak on it? Okay.
Sorry, Mr. President. I think to add on what Honorable Komede is saying, they also want to take us to the matters of their country, which we believe that each country has got its sovereignty. We can't just get in, because when you look at this, even in the international relations, they did give us this memorandum, and you find that as long as they are also inciting South Africa, according to that memorandum, and noting that they don't understand that we are a parliament, and there is parliament also in their country, then also as Honourable Commissioner has alluded that. We all belong to a body which they are supposed to start there before coming to South Africa. And now they are insulting us as if we don't care about the people who have died. That also is an insult to South Africa, knowing very well where we come from. And we know very well that we are champions of human rights in this country. So really, we can attend to the issue, as he's saying, of the bill, but not in political affairs. I thank you. Sure.
Thank you very much. If there is no speaker anymore, can I say that you are in agreement that I should sign this letter back to the speaker so that then she can communicate to them? Because what is actually referred to us is, I think it's only that one point of us to scrap the green paper, the migration policy. So then we responded to that one only. And the rest of the other things, I think the speaker expects the international relations to respond to them. And then they will do so in their own right as well as a political, as a portfolio committee. If that is agreed, then they will produce this letter and then that I can sign and then send it to the speaker. Honorable members, I think also I think you may have been given some other documents from SONO, from Sterkspruit. And then this submission of SONO, I think it has been sent directly to Eddie and then straight to me. It did not go through the speaker. And then AD, I think, did some sort of an exercise. But basically, Mr. Sono explains that he's in Sterkspruit and then he belongs to Amaguve, traditional council. And then he has got problems with home affairs. But his problem is that he has got children that are attending school there, then they don't have IDs or birth certificates. And generally these children are coming from across, from Lesotho. Yes. And then they don't have parents, I think, in the country. They are attending school in our country. And then Sono then wants us to dish home affairs to teach birth certificates to them. And he has been engaging home affairs left and right, and there has been engagement with him. And then, but it looks like he doesn't rest. He doesn't rest, and eventually then he sent this particular document to ourselves here. which AD did some exercise to get some sort of responses from the department, and then probably only AD can explain what steps did he take. You may proceed, AD.
Okay. After receiving the complaint from Mr. Sono, I did call him to find out, and then he explained to me that no, the manager there at the state trade office is very arrogant. So then, based on that, no, and I asked him why. He said no, the people who goes there, then they are not being assisted by the manager. So after that, what I did was to call the provincial manager, and then to explain to me, because it's massive. He said no, the DDG for civic service was there in Stelspruit, and then also I think there's somebody who was there at the office as well to engage with the community there, and then it was found that no, Mr. Sono is trying to assist mostly children, as the chairperson has indicated, from Lesotho. So he's acting like a runner. So if he doesn't get his way, this is not the first manager that he has been fighting with. So that's when I asked Mr. Mabulu if he can send something, if they have been there, and then he sent this response that has been forwarded over to you. But mostly the children that have been listed on there, they are basically from Lesotho. He wants them to get documentation from South Africa.
Okay. You do not have a copy of it? I think you should be having copies there. But I think that is the thing.
I don't understand why AD has to react on that, because we've got the minister's guru man next to us here. If we have problems like that, we'll have to send it to him, and then he can account to us and give us a reply. But anyway, thank you to AD for what he did.
No, the thing is that this particular person sent for the attention of the committee. And therefore, if you send it for the attention of the committee, the main man is AD. He's AD to make all the sorts of correspondences and communications to make sure that relevant persons, that man, Sono doesn't want to see him because he's just part of the Department of Home Affairs, which is making him run, you know, like a headless chicken. So he now wants the political committee of parliament to intervene in his department. Hence, he was not going to be the right person at all. And hence is that all what is left here, honourable members, is that we may need to respond back to Sono. But I really wanted to suggest that the department has responded and how they engage with him. But I believe that there may be a need for us to go to that place. Because the Sterkspruit area is an area that has got no boundary with Lesotho. People just walk across, goats walk across, horses walk across, cattle walk across, and then now you've got persons that walk across as well, and then men that have got children this side, but they are Basotho's that side. The children then can't have IDs or whatever, all sorts of things. Then those that are from Lesotho schooling this side, and then when they reach matric, they need to be having a birth certificate and have an ID number, and all sorts of questions now arise.
Even the goats are making children.
A possibility. So now, I just thought that probably our response to him may not be technical in responding to his problem, because it's the department that has the capacity to respond whether they are going to assist those people or not. But I mean, we can't really tell the department to just dish birth certificates left and right just to every person that pitches up at the office. there are certain compliance requirements that are required. And but ourselves is to go and see how people live there and what is the extent of these challenges. And also maybe it is possible to visit the port of entry in that particular area, and I understand that there are a lot of challenges. And because of the remote area that is there, and then of course there is a possibility that even our officers there may behave haywire. Remember that when you've got no oversight, the for dubious character to creep in, it is very easy. And then let's take that Sono is right, that he has got a challenge with Home Affairs, then we have to go there and see what is there that Sono is seeing. If we agree with him, then we agree on the ground. If there is nothing really other than just making horrible noise, then we must be able to say so. Are we in any sort of consensus that we must find time in 2017 to visit that particular area, and then Alien Company then must start looking at preparing our trip there? We may go there on a Thursday, on a Thursday morning, look at these issues, and then Friday then we disperse and go to our respective areas and come back home on Monday. Because we'll have, if we have to go there, I think the nearest airport is Bloemfontein. It can only be Bloemfontein.
Yeah.
I think so. To get to the south. Yeah. So that we don't go there and come back here and then start moving up again. Don't you want to go to the south? Eastern Cape, yes. Sterk's Plain is in Eastern Cape, yes. But it is just at the corner of Free State, Lesotho, and the Eastern Cape. But in the Eastern Cape province. But unfortunately, we must go to Lesotho Airport in Bloemfontein to get there. Otherwise, from the other side, it's going to be difficult. Yes. But I mean, the technocrats are here, then they can do the analysis of this. Are we agreeing on that particular move? So we'll respond to him and say and indicate that the portfolio committee will visit the area in the first half of 2017. Is it possible? Gumet?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, in fact, I fully agree with you, Chairperson. But I think we should also consider, given that the fact that we will be already there, to look at the other close by border ports and see what exactly the situation is managed, and then the communities. The Basutu communities in Lesotho and the communities in South Africa, and see how we are managing those things, and whether that special arrangement. It's a pity it has not come to this committee. There is a special arrangement in Lesotho. The minister I was talking about on TV. Perhaps after getting a presentation on that dispensation we are having with Lesotho, because I also do not have the details. Of that dispensation, and then we go there, and then one of the areas then become stealth spray because we had been invited, but we look at other communities that they know of, because I think in their experience there are some of these things. Thanks, Chairperson.
So you're almost suggesting that we may find ourselves for a week out there. For a week out there, yes. Yes. And then, because of course the Sterk's Plain is a border community, and then looking at other ones, a special dispensation, the people that are using it that much, they use it through the Fixback port of entry. That is where that is the one that is a little bit active. Yeah. But like as you're saying, is that when you speak about the any other border community, how we're managing them, then we may need you to take the week and then go there on a Monday, and then stay there on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday you wake up and then you go home. Then they will see, they look at the weeks after the recesses and then the week that is for committees for oversight, and then we can take that particular week. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, all right. And then, other than that, honourable members, is the program of the committee. I hope you have got copies, all of you. The program in front of you recognises that we are still proceeding with the Refugee Amendment Bill, the public hearings on the 24th of January. But like as I've tried to conscientize alien company, that on the 24th may be difficult to find ourselves here, because ordinarily these are some of the times when people are battling with their children to go to universities and all sorts of funny things, accommodation, acceptance and admissions. I really don't know. And then, but we need to have it there. Those that are here, and then we may be able to proceed. Otherwise, if we push it from the 24th, then it starts actually cramming our program. There are certain things that we can't do away with. The quarterly report, you can't. Then you are going to have a State of the Nation address in February, and then you can't avoid dealing with it as a committee. And then you on the 21st, then we have got the submissions on the Refugees Amendment Bill response by the department. You can't avoid that. We can only cram 21 and 28 if we are capable. But you can't really do that much with this. And then you have got the Minister of Finance also coming. And you know that that particular process also kickstarts other processes. And also the strategic plan of the department on the 14th of March. And then the study tour that we talked about, that will actually make us a little bit capacitated when we deal with the immigration bill that is coming. This is what is in front of us. But then we must also remember that with this BMA bill, we may find ourselves having to cram it in here if we are not able to complete it this year. But the intention is to try and find a way of completing it and making sure that it doesn't lapse as well on the parliamentary program in terms of the NA rules. Then the second thing as well is that the BRR report is not here. And then, but with the BRR report, I think the department is expecting to table the annual report either this Friday or Monday, one of the two. But I said that they must not sleep. They must make sure that they table it on Friday. So which means is that next week, on Tuesday, although I'm informed that there is a sitting in the morning, which is going to coincide with ours, but I believe that I think we can get a special arrangement and a special permission to do so, and also find a room closer to the National Assembly, so that if we are required, then we should be able to cross easily. But I think for us to actually finalize the BRR report, then they should be able to agree to it, unless... What is the sitting in the morning for?
It's to adopt the adjustment.
Okay.
Yeah,
it happens in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as we meet maybe in G26. Mm-hmm. If we meet in G26.
At 9:30.
Yeah. And start at 9 o'clock. And then we should be able to do some work, and then we should be allowed to deal with the BRR report and hear the department on it as well as the Auditor General. But then in the meantime is to allow Adam actually to put together that report based on their quarterly reports that we have received, because in any way the annual report is just a consolidation of the quarterly reports in principle. And but if it is, it's also possible to get a draft of the annual report from the department. The draft, I mean, it is, you get it on your own lines. It's not tabled in parliament. It's a draft, because they have to wait for the Auditor General. Because I mean, remember that there is nothing that's going to change. They are just going to insert the audit report. That's it. And that's it. But what it pertains to, the content of their quarterly report will remain the same in the annual report.
You mean Scott Sam to give it to
Yes.
you?
Yes. No, Sam will be forced to actually communicate official document. Remember that what you're asking the draft part of the annual report that to assist you on what they have consolidated. So that you don't have a different version, you see. But all what we are saying is just to try, honourable members, to have some sort of a draft report.
Yeah.
And then if there is no material changes on Tuesday, when we hear the department, then we can put that to be agreed to. Same time. Then it gets put into the HEC. And then we don't have to do anything next year other than just simply pass it in the House. Then our program then is not affected.
Well, if it comes on Friday, I should be able to give it, but I'll do it on the weekend, and it should be the first thing Monday morning for members to look at before we discuss it on Tuesday.
I think that is just the intention. Because if you are going to wait to hear the department telling us exactly what they have been telling us for the past 12 months, and then we can't have the report agreed to. Which means is that now it's only next year that we must agree to the report, table it, and then go and make noise in the House. When every portfolio committee, they are finished and forgotten about the BRR report, they are actually looking at the strategic plans of the department. We will be dealing with an annual report, which I believe in, then it may not assist us. So that is what I think I'm requesting from AD and Adam, from the quarterly expenditure reports, if they can put together even the report of the department, and then we should be able to move forward on Tuesday and make the special arrangement with the Office of Frolic, so that before Thursday we must be very clear that we have got permission to sit on that day. And
then we can also, I mean, also legislation, because we're dealing, must be dealing with the people on that day, then it's also the legislature.
Yes. Okay. All right, and then we can't deal with the minutes, honourable members, because honourable Hussein has collapsed the quorum. But is there anything that anyone wants to say in terms of the program? The study tour to Germany, it will be a little bit hot at that time. And then we hope that even political conditions would have improved in Germany. Calais, what is that? The camp at Calais. has been dismantled, eh? They have tried to move them out now, because those refugees there, they were fighting like nothing. They may think that we look the same. Figler.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I don't want to argue further, but it's about the program. I echo with you, because we're still standing with a problem where you try to register your child, there is no reply. Now we might end up getting them into February. So I wanted to suggest the same thing. Maybe we must look at, try to push the dates from the 24th and the 31st, and look if we can't fit in before, say, the first week of February. That was my suggestion. I don't know.
The first week of February is the State of the Nation address.
It's not on the...
Yeah. Let's open up another meeting on the 7th.
We can move that one.
Yes.
A week later.
On the 7th, but like as I'm saying is that we have got a lot of things that require to be attended to. The BMA, the BRRR, they are not on this program. And then
we have to discuss that.
They require to be concluded as well as early as possible. But it will be best that by Friday then it will be very clear what would be problematic on the BRR. We will be knowing especially after we submitted the request to the Frolic's office. And then if he gives us permission, then we know that we will know what we can clear next week, mm-hmm. and what we won't be able to clear, and then so that we can put it on the 7th of February. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I just hope that we'll be able to do that, because usually when there is a State of the Nation address, members don't want to do anything. They run around buying suits and they go and cut some nice dresses and... Yes. You see? Can we just try and compromise some of our time and then and see that we can just do that little work? There will still be a full day between the State of the Nation address and our meeting. Honorable members, the last thing is just information. There is also a submission made by somebody else on the issue of this one of blocking IDs. The Department of Home Affairs has gone crazy. They are just blocking people's IDs and on reasons known to them. And this outcry is now a lot more louder. And then, but I did conscientize the DG that once we have an opportunity, we may call him and Kize to come and explain themselves what is there that they are doing. They have just gone on a rampage of closing IDs. But their reasons is that where they suspect that people are foreigners, they got their IDs by hook and crook and blah, blah, blah. And then some of the people, you see, they got our IDs, but on intelligence purposes, then they are being seen going across to those countries where it is known to be their countries of origin. And hence now they create problems. And then they just close. When people go and apply for a smart ID, find that their ID is blocked. When they try to go and marry, they find the ID is blocked. When they go and try and open an account, the banks tell them, no, you've got no ID, and all sorts of things. So, but that is rife in Ngomas, in the Nelspruit area, the people from Swaziland and Mozambique. Okay. And then it's a matter that we may need to talk to. one of these days, and then it is trying to remind us on something. You may proceed.
Okay. You recall that submission that the chair is referring to was considered on the 8th of November.
Yes.
And then the DG, in his response, he said, no, they are going to be sending people there in Mpumalanga. And then once there's a report, then they will come and brief the committee.
Mm.
So that's the one that the chair is talking about. It was from Mr. Mshongo.
Mm. Okay. So it's the thing that is outstanding, it's a problem, and it's a big problem.
Yeah, Chair.
Yes.
I just want to say this is not a new accident, because this thing has been happening. Now, if an official, okay, I'll make an example about Eddie. The first time I saw Eddie, I thought he was somebody else. Not from Africa, not from South Africa. Now, yeah, I'm from South Africa, but not him. I'm Xhosa light. Xhosa dark. So, Chair, you recall 2 years ago on the, not a city vision, what is this, Voice, and the paper from Joburg, where people were sent away and say, no, you're not a South African, you're a foreigner. Then the person will bring in a birth certificate, everything, the mother's ID. Then they've been chased away. I've been fighting that, Chairperson, especially in Joburg. Now, I think it's a repeat of that. And secondly, when they chase you away, they don't tell you which documents you must bring in. I had two cases here in Cape Town, which I had to go and intervene on those cases. The person had the ID, was born as a South African, and then somebody else was using the same surname in Zimbabwe. Then they say he's from Zimbabwe. He keep on saying, I'm not from Zimbabwe. I had to go there with the same papers they asked him to bring in. Then that thing was beat up. Now, really, we need to talk to the DG to see or have somebody oversee if we're getting the same service that you get as a public rep. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yeah, I think that is what we need to be doing. We will demand that particular report from the DG and Mkhize to come and explain themselves. And of course, is that even though that we just think that they've gone crazy, they are trying to do or execute their responsibilities of trying to clean the population register, because our population register is it has been infiltrated, and it needs to be cleaned, because you see, the worst part of it is that we have got people that are having our ID, active ID, and a passport of South Africa, and having a passport of Swaziland as well, active. Just decide on a day when it's in Nelspruit, and then if you want to go to Swaziland and say, no, my South African passport is going to be stamped too much, then he takes a Swazi passport, then you go across and come back. So now the passports are being used to save pages on each other, but you know. And then, but remember that the problem is that these particular persons have not been given dual citizenship. They have given themselves dual citizenship. It's only themselves that knows that they've got dual citizenship. The authorities in between don't know that. And then there are provisions in our laws that talks to dual citizenship and how those people should be treated, and when and how you lose that citizenship. But now we've got many that they've got dual citizenship without the knowledge of the authorities. And then it is very dangerous. Because if it's a South African commit crime this side, then we quickly press buttons at our ports of entry to look at this particular person. But this person now goes across with a Swazi passport. Then we can't pick the person. It's gone. And then the one with our South African passport, then it's inside, but what is inside is just a theoretical person. but the practical person is
across the other side.
You see, then that is very problematic. Honourable members, I think on that score, then we should close this meeting, and then hope for the best that next week we'll have, and then liaise with UN Isaac to see that the bill comes out as quick as possible, so that I can have a look at it, a copy of it in time, and then start making arrangements. Okay. Thank you very much. This meeting is closed.
Yeah.